So today on the podcast, we are talking about something that everyone discusses at some point in their life, and that is whether or not to have children. It's either a hell no, I'm not doing that, it's too expensive, or yes, I want to do it at some point. But one conversation that really doesn't happen that often, needs to happen more frequently, is the conversation around financial planning when it comes to having a child. The average American family spends 15% of their income on childcare. The conversation around financial planning really needs to happen a lot earlier and needs to be a comfortable conversation that all parents-to-be feel like they can have. And today on the podcast, we have Saran and Mel, who are the co-founders of Mirza. And Mirza is a tool that empowers you to see the bigger picture for your family and your career, whether it's childcare costs, family financial planning, or even returning to work. They have you covered with their app. And in talking to them, I learned so much. I think everyone else listening to this podcast too is going to feel like they learned something new. As always, you know, when we have guests on the podcast, we want to hear about why they created the tool, but then also, you know, how did they go about creating this? And what are the steps that they've been taking to build this product? So I think people who are looking for an entrepreneur, an entrepreneurship conversation that focuses on how they got there and then also where the idea came from. There's a lot of good storytelling in this episode that I think everyone will love. So enjoy it, and I will catch you on the flip side. All right. Hi, Saran and Mel. Welcome to the Next Big Thing podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So let's talk about Mirza. What is Mirza?
So Mirza is this company that Mel and I started to on this very ambitious mission to close the gender pay gap. And what we do is step in at that pivotal moment that really can kick off the motherhood penalty. It's 80% of the pay gap. So we provide a fully integrated financial planning app with an avenue to save and invest towards the cost of care. So it's actually this kind of full picture for parents and caregivers to support long-term financial health.
Amazing. And where did this idea, I mean, obviously this is such an important topic right now, and I'm sure you have a lot of commentary around 2020 and beyond, but where did this idea come from?
Wow. I mean, honestly, we started before 2020. Mel, I think I'm going to pivot punt to you to talk through that kind of first conversation.
Mel, I can't hear you.
Oh my! Hi, I muted myself. I'm back. Hi.
Yeah. I was like, wow, she looks great, but I can't hear a thing she's saying.
Yeah, I did it like on the mic. Okay. It's Monday. Yeah. So we started this January of 2020. Yes, January of 2020. I'd been doing a bunch of research into women's health and kind of just perimenopause, actually, but then kind of backtracking into the fact that women really don't know anything that happens to their bodies after puberty, and we don't know how to have babies on purpose, and we don't know what's going to happen when we hit the age of about 45. And Saran and I just started talking about the fact that we really think about our bodies and our careers on separate tracks, and we never really think about how they integrate, but that integration is actually pivotal to women's success in the workplace and understanding the fact that taking time out of the workforce to have children or the different kind of hormonal changes that happen really play a huge role in career success. And so originally we were going to start by making a product only for women to kind of navigate their careers and their bodies and all of these things. And we actually got feedback from a professor of mine at LBS, London Business School, that she hated it. She was like, I hate that idea. And she was like, you have to stop putting that.
Wait.
Like full
stop. So you told her your idea and she's like, no.
She said verbatim, I hate it.
Oh, and I said,
and I was like, okay, because everyone else has said this is awesome. Why do you hate it? And she was like, we have to stop putting the onus on women to change things that are out of their control.
Oh my God. Good for her. Love her for giving that feedback. Cause that's so important. It's like you go to ask your friends about ideas. This is like the hardest thing I think of building a business too, is like you ask everyone around you about like something that you're building and they don't want to hurt your feelings. So they're just like, yeah, that's amazing. And then that one person who doesn't have any, like have any stake in anything, you know, and isn't afraid to hurt your feelings is brutally honest, but that's an amazing point that she made. It's so true, is the pressure is always on women.
Yeah, exactly.
And so what happened after that? After she gave you that feedback, did you guys go back and build this platform with both men and women in mind? Like, what was your path then after that?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the moment that we recognized, well, we think of the gender pay gap as this, and the motherhood penalty, but really it's this parenthood penalty. There's data around that too, that men who take a quote unquote step back from their careers still face a penalty once they return to the workplace. It's smaller than the 39% for women, but that still exists. And it's also this kind of entire ecosystem of it. Her feedback really widened our eyes to what are all of the factors at play here. So on an individual level, we're making this decision of my salary, often as a woman, versus the cost of care. And that shouldn't be a my salary. That should be a us as a household. And the fact that there are, we have some horror stories of accountants who have told people that, told couples, the wife in particular, hey, it's not worth the cost of your salary. That's just the wrong.
Wait, what? They like target the wife in saying that?
Well, it's, I think this, I guess not
to target, but I guess it's almost like a,
it's this assumption.
Yes, exactly.
It's this assumption that because caregiving is what women do, then it should be this math of the woman's salary versus cost of care. And that simply doesn't make sense. But then also there's so much that in this entire ecosystem that employer biases around offering part-time work or non-client facing roles and just the kinds of work that put women on a lower earnings trajectory that comes into play. And then at home, the way that we've seen with COVID, how so many women have lost jobs is really this kind of burden of care as well, that we don't have equity in how we share household work at home. So really, that's that kind of moment of, yeah, we need to build this for parents and work through employers, because we need everyone who touches this ecosystem to be part of the solution.
It's amazing too, that you had this idea in January before COVID. I mean, you started in January before COVID hit. Like, what are the freaking odds that that happened? And like so much of the workforce changed last year, especially those stats. Like, I want to get into like some staggering statistics and like numbers that you guys know, because I'm sure you know so much. But when I look at last year and I think about how last year panned out with so many women leaving the workforce, like I'd love to just hear your thoughts on that. And then just like stats in general that you guys see.
Oh boy. Okay. So to start, over 4.6 million payroll jobs have been lost by women since the beginning of the pandemic. And this is in the US. One in four women are considering downshifting or leaving their careers permanently. And really for women in the 25 to 44 age bracket, 32% of women who are currently jobless cite the reason for being jobless as lack of childcare. And that just, yeah, we started this before the pandemic began, but COVID is kind of putting this huge exclamation point on what we're saying and what we're trying to do, that, yep, here's the kind of macro environment.
Unbelievable. It's crazy to me. I really hope that that things change and that we can move forward and see more women decide to believe that they can have it all and not compromise for anything. So those are just crazy. How many parents? Okay, so for those listening, I mean, I don't think anyone listening, this would be a surprise, but I'm single and I don't have kids. So I really want to be able to put myself in the shoes of parents. I'm assuming, are you both parents?
Neither of us.
Oh my God. Okay, great. Okay. So I love this then. This is great. So, cause when I was coming up with these questions, I was like, all right, I really want to put myself in the shoes of, you know, people that have kids, but how many parents or future parents are just like used to winging it when it comes to this stuff?
Honestly, most people are just winging it. And part of why, as two people who don't have kids yet, the reason we wanted to start this is because we didn't want to wing it. So 35% of women wind up delaying their careers to this point that we feel like, with a finger in the air, we feel like the impact is going to be lower or we have more financial cushion. But I mean, I'm one of those women, and I just never felt like I had hit a point yet that I wouldn't be hit with a huge, as we know, motherhood penalty. And so most people are winging it, just to the extent that we know that most of us aren't saving towards the cost of childcare or towards cost of starting a family, even though we know that that's really expensive. We are just effectively flying by the seat of our pants. That's why we wind up doing this math of my salary versus cost of care. And it's why we kind of see this moment that we're facing how hard it is to parent and not having the tools at our disposal and the financial support to actually get the care that we need.
And just building off that a bit, I think this idea of delaying childcare is something that's coming up more and more. And, you know, freezing your eggs is now such a big like thing. It's something that employers are covering the cost of freezing your eggs so that you can keep working for them. And, you know, I think it's really interesting because we do have this narrative now of, oh, if I just wait until I'm further along in my career and I get a certain promotion or I'm making enough money, then it will be easier to have kids and I won't be as affected. But actually the data shows that in many cases, it's actually more detrimental, and it's only in very few select industries that delaying having children will help your career. And we're also then putting people in women in particular in a position where at 35, your fertility doesn't fall off a cliff, but it definitely declines. So the likelihood that you'll have to go through IVF, which is an incredibly stressful and emotional thing, on top of, you know, on average costing about $66,000 for three cycles, which is what the average couple needs to actually have a successful IVF pregnancy. I mean, that's a huge financial burden to put on people for delaying having children. And it's just not actually the answer. The answer would be structural changes like paid parental leave, childcare support, and men chipping in more around the house. So it's a really weird place to be in, to have all of these things, like, you know, it's sold to us as self-care and empowering to make these decisions, but it's actually just a complete lack and failure on society and like an infrastructure that are making women have to make these changes.
Can I, Mel, you brought up one of my biggest pet peeves with corporations. And obviously now I'm on my entrepreneurship path like you guys are, but I spent, you know, 12 years in the corporate world. So I'm very familiar with how everything works. And I remember feeling so bothered when big companies would like have gyms at the office and add in all these like quote unquote perks so that you would just never leave and you would just work forever. And it was so unhealthy. And then to think on top of that, you're so right with like the freezing your eggs thing. It's like, you know, we really care for you is the message. But then the underlying theme is like, it's an inconvenience for us if you have children. So just don't have them. And then you can just freeze your eggs and continue to work for us, which is complete bullshit. It's crazy.
Yes. Like if we just actually gave parents paid parental leave and then helped them with childcare, they could come back to work and it wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't have to like completely upheave their entire situation. And that's like my big hill right now. I just hate everything about that messaging. Instead of just offering
the real, yeah,
it really is.
It's this kind of Band-Aid solution because everyone is just responding. This actually goes back to your question of whether or not people are, how much people are planning in advance right now. And if we're all just flying by the seat of our pants, everyone is just responding. So we, as women have been responding to this kind of biases that we see in the workplace or that we anticipate by delaying starting families. And as a result, the employers are also both capitalizing on that in a way and also responding with, well, then let me support with the cost of fertility as an employee benefit. And that piece just, these are all kinds of Band-Aids. They're not structural solutions to what's actually happening. What's actually happening is that care is unaffordable. It's that men have to contribute at home. And we are seeing millennial generations start to move in that direction. I'll put a positive note on that. And we're seeing some really great dads and some really great groups starting to campaign for this. And then we need employers to also stop structuring the workplace around this antiquated notion of a 9-to-5 or 9-to-8 or whatever it is today, and that there is the workplace still being designed for one primary breadwinner. And
totally. God, so true. And it's amazing how much it falls on women too, I feel like, because women are the ones actually having the babies. And so like men just get to like easily just kind of like piece out of the conversation. And women are like, okay, well, just because I like my body's built to have a child doesn't mean that I'm the only person that, you know, is planning this or doing this. It's kind of crazy. I want to talk about more of like the Mirza tool and who you guys are serving, because so it's interesting when you talk about childcare costs as someone that's single. When I think about having a child, I immediately, which is just crazy to think about how the media has kind of like influenced and infiltrated my mind, I immediately think about like college tuition. And I don't even think about like the immediate like needs and like childcare costs, which is just unbelievable that like there's not more awareness around that. So for people who are interested in using Mirza, is it people who maybe like weren't necessarily planning on having a child and now they need to start planning? Can single parents use it? Like, who is it really built for?
I think that's a really good point that you just made about like you think about college tuition, but one of our favorite stats is that infant care is more expensive than public college in 33 states.
Shut up. Yeah, that's crazy. So that's what I'm saying is like, we're so used to hearing this stuff when we read the news, and then that's not even the immediate like challenge that needs to be taken care of.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just thinking about this fact that we don't prepare for the cost of childcare because this whole system is still just designed around dual income households, coupled household and one primary breadwinner. So childcare, you know, it's expensive because you really shouldn't need it. And that it just, none of that makes sense. That's not how our economy works anymore. And it's not how economic futures will work anymore, if we would like our economy to grow. So that's part of why I think for us, it was so important to design this in mind of every single potential family unit structure. I was raised by a single mom and I was home alone a lot because we couldn't afford childcare. And that's not the norm. It's not what people do these days for many reasons. And it was really hard for my mom to have had to do that. And I was also old enough to, at that point, to take care of myself. And I think that kind of heartache that my mom had to go through, and so many single parents do, that just simply shouldn't exist. And I think that's where we can really help. Part of what we do in making care more affordable is so that every single family unit can be able to unlock the ability to work and support their families and have a fulfilling family life.
And like, regardless of their circumstances, really, right? It's like, regardless of what's happened, because you can't control sometimes that you're a single parent, right? You can't control certain things, but it's like, no matter what, Mirza is able to actually help you plan so that you don't feel like you're a victim of your current circumstance.
Exactly. And I think, like, you know, I'm also single and don't have kids. And I think I can still go in and put in dummy numbers for a partner if I want, or I can see what it would look like to do it on my own. I think something that we probably could and would love to build in is like, can your parents help out? Or like, what does your village look like and who else is involved in your financial health and your family's financial health? So if you do want to do, like, I have a lot of friends who are thinking about having kids on their own now because they've just gotten to a point where they're like, I don't necessarily want to wait until I meet someone.
Dude, that's how I feel sometimes. Like, I'm 32 right now, and I remember going to my gynecologist last year, and she was like, hey, we should talk sometime about you freezing your eggs. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, I feel so young. Like, how is that possible? But I haven't met someone that I'm dying to be with the rest of my life that I could imagine myself having kids with. So it's just kind of like, okay, well, if it doesn't happen, then maybe I'll just be a single parent, or maybe I just won't have kids, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm exactly the same age, same place. And it's like, if I met someone tomorrow, I think about this all the time. Like, if I met someone tomorrow, I'm still probably 3 years
out. Oh my God. I think about that, like the timing of that all the time. I'm like, okay, if I meet someone in the next month, then maybe we get married. And then by the time I'm 34, we could have kids, and then I won't need to. It's like crazy what we as women go through just to plan that out, because we have to, because of our biology. It's insane. Versus guys just don't have to go through that. It's really crazy. What about like for people who just have no idea? Like, I mean, I like have no idea what childcare expenses, like what they would even look like, right? Like you have no idea where to start. You have no idea. You're just kind of like throwing yourself into a brand new thing. Like, is Mirza still a good solution for people who just have no idea like what their expenses are going to be?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's probably, we can be as helpful for the most planner type of person, which is probably my husband, who plans out everything to a T. But also for someone, honestly, like me, who does fly by the seat of her pants and just... And so if you give us your zip code and play around with scenarios of different zip codes, we can actually just show you what the cost of cost of raising a family is going to be. We spend so much time and cognitive labor on the kinds of operational aspects of our lives, including, what's the best place to raise my family, and what are these costs coming up, and why should people have to go out and do all of this research? We make it this kind of individual family problem, but it shouldn't be.
Totally. Oh my gosh. What you said is so true. That's absolutely, it's like bringing the knowledge and the know-how to someone versus them having to feel like it's such a laborious process to like go out and find every single thing that they might spend money on. It's crazy. What about like, if someone were to say, okay, is Mirza like a mint or like another financial planning tool that someone would use? I mean, I know that they're probably not exactly in the same category, but I'd love your thoughts, because I can imagine people who are listening or people that are used to budgeting, right? Just like general budgeting tools, are familiar with those tools.
So we're not a budgeting tool, but I would say, what I think sets us apart is the approach that we've taken with this parenthood penalty. So we have your paid and unpaid leave, your return to work part-time versus full-time, all baked into the product, so that you can really see the long-term impacts of your decision around taking time out of the workplace. So like Saran mentioned already, we do this calculation of salary after tax for childcare in this year, but the actual penalty in the long-term can be up to 10 times your annual salary, when you think about missed 401k contributions, retirement, and just your overarching career acceleration. So I think that what we've done is really make it, it's more of an accurate picture, especially for women. Like we've really baked in what the motherhood penalty looks like, and you can see how that will change based on the decisions that you're making.
And this piece of, Mel mentioned this career acceleration as well of, so this moment that we start our families is this moment that our careers can really start to take off. That's why statistically there has been this kind of, there's a motherhood penalty and people reference this fatherhood bump. Really that fatherhood bump that men see is really a result mostly of career acceleration at a point in time, right place, right time. And this piece that we then want to help you be able to understand what are the best, how to think about this as a family and what is that long-term outlook. So if people who are using this want to take some time away from work to take care of their families, that should be a choice. It shouldn't be this absolutely. It's, we wind up just doing things because it happens and we don't have another choice, but we just really want to give you the tools to make a better informed decision. Look at this of, hey, you know, honestly, if we stagger our parental leaves in this way, and then I take X length of time off, my husband takes X length of time off, this is what our long-term financial futures look like, and this is how it can work best for us. And that's then this kind of giving people back agency that you're actually choosing to do this.
Right, versus feeling like you're at the mercy of something. Absolutely. So you mentioned something earlier about this idea of people waiting to have kids because there's so much encouragement from their employer that they don't need to have kids right now. So they can just kind of like push it off. But so the question is it really possible? I mean, genuinely want your honest feedback on this. Is it possible for both women and men to hit these career goals after having children? Or is this more of, I mean, I think the answer could be, of course, you know, like, yeah, of course, but in the society that we live in, right, that's not necessarily something that is talked about or even encouraged. And what needs to happen for us to start to believe that having a child doesn't mean that you're sacrificing everything that you want because of your career, if that makes sense?
I would say not right now. I don't actually think it is possible because of the lack of support that, like, in government and companies. The U.S. remains the only OECD country to not have paid maternity leave, let alone paid parental leave, which is a huge factor. For example, like Google increased their parental leave policy from 4 paid months to 5 and increased the retention of women by 50%. So even just that one little thing moves the needle so much and allows women to keep working. And I think that until we make the big changes necessary of having childcare subsidy, of having paid leave like that, I don't really see it being. I think you can do it if you have a lot of financial resources and you can have a live-in nanny and you have the ability to have outside help. But for the average person, I just don't think it's a reality.
I think it's that piece for the certain privileged few. Sure, you can absolutely do it, but it's still not easy. And for most Americans, it's just not reality right now. And I think the surveys that we've done have shown that most people are cognizant of that too. We need to build up this movement of people who want that change. So it starts on this really kind of grassroots individual level of each person, not just solving for themselves, because that's what's been happening right now. we on an individual level kind of just solve it for ourselves of, here's how I'm going to make it work. Here's how my household is going to make it work. But then that's not the kind of systemic solution. So that's kind of what we're going after in the long term. We can help empower people today with the information and the tools that you need and some of that childcare support that you need. But long term, this kind of, we think of the people who are on Team Mirza as the people who are going to build and push this movement for long-term systemic change.
Yeah, it's interesting when you say that. It's almost like if someone is able to find a way to make it work, they're almost like an outlier because they like took extra steps to do it versus it just being the norm that someone can just naturally do it themselves, which is crazy. I want to pivot a little bit to talking about both of you working together and building this company. I mean, I'm like amazed that you had this idea in January 2020. Like I cannot, it's like my mind will not move past the fact that you did this like right before COVID hit. Just wild to me. Talk to me about what it's like being co-founders and how you split up responsibilities. Cause we really don't have as many co-founders on the podcast. We usually have single founders, and I'd love to hear more about how the two of you have been able to work together and you know, disseminate different responsibilities. Have you built a team? Like, what does that look like for both of you?
I always say this, but I think my favorite thing about working with Saran was that we were friendly before we started working together. We'd had like probably 5 coffees together over the course of a certain period of time, and then started, you know, both just had this like lightning bolt kind of conversation in January, and then started working together and became friends as we went, but not having that friendship baggage, which I think a lot of people who start working together might be friends first. And we had none of that kind of like emotional, there was like, we've been able to work together so well because it was professional first, if that makes sense. So there's never been any kind of like personal feeling around decisions that we've made or come, like we get into arguments. We've had to like apologize to our team before about like heated arguments with each other. But I think it's been so nice because it's always been on such a level playing field of seeing each other as like absolute, just intellectual and like professional equals. And now we like also just talk to each other probably 23/7.
Yeah. I think that piece really of what Mel mentioned. So we never hesitated to debate each other. But then that also means we communicate all the time. So this piece of because so much of this happened through COVID and so much of our interactions have had to be virtual as well, we also really over-communicate with each other of, hey, this was the intent behind this message. I want to check in and see how you're feeling about X, Y, and Z. And that kind of just checking in on each other and making sure that we are on the same page and any of our communications are just completely clear with intent has been so important. And then as a result, we kind of just wound up as a result of our personalities wound up splitting up the things that we do based on that. And, you know, honestly, I don't know how solo founders do it. So I think,
tell us more about that. So like when you say that, because we do have a lot of solo founders on the podcast and then a lot of solo founders, honestly, that are listening. So what are the pros to you having a co-founder that you really feel like are just completely invaluable? Obviously having a second person as a co-founder helps a lot, but even in terms of like mindset, like where do you really see that being beneficial?
It's the ability to celebrate an email. You know, I think that so much of being a solo founder, I started something previously and, you know, was essentially working on it on my own. And it's so lonely. And so the ability like for us to have like the smallest little win to be like, oh my gosh, this person just emailed, or oh my gosh, like this one little tiny thing that no one else is going to understand and be able to get as excited about is so nice because the road to fundraising, the road to building out a team is rocky. Just as cliched as possible, but it's all of the cliches that you hear. And I think that it's that little tiny win situation every day that keeps you going that I've really valued the most.
And I think as founders, you go through this experience, this roller coaster of emotions within a day. And then of course, on a macro level, within a week, within a month, and having that other person there to help pick you up and when you need it and celebrate when you need it. Oh, that's so invaluable. And I think for just on a very operational level right now, we're at the stage that we're fundraising. And so we've been able to just kind of divide the responsibilities so that I can go out and fundraise and not worry that, oh, but what about our team? And what about, are we going to have to hit pause on everything we're doing? Because Mel is the queen of getting shit done and making sure that we're on track. And in fact, that's in part some of the debates that we get into, that I just run at something at full speed that should be 3 years down the line, and Mel has to
It's like that balance. I was like, when you're saying like that you guys have that balance, I'm like, well, I use my therapist for that right now. I'm like, that's not good. But it's true. It's like when you want to celebrate things and you want to like, it's like you need someone to balance you out and then gut check you. And I think that that's so valuable in having a co-founder. When I started my company, my dad actually was like, are you sure you don't want a co-founder? And still to this day, I'm like, maybe down the line, you know, at least when I build out like an executive team, that will kind of be like my idea of a co-founder. Because I do agree. It's like, I would love to be able to send people emails and be like, oh my gosh, this is so exciting. Or like, because you really don't have that camaraderie almost, because you're just on your own. So you guys know we have a lot of people listening who are starting their business or are in the thick of entrepreneurship. And what was it like starting Mirza and then growing the business and getting, I love that you talked about like conducting surveys, right? Because that's so important. So many people don't think about the research side of things. They just go and ask their friends, which is like not necessarily the best way to gather research because there's a lot of bias there. So what are things that you've been able to do since you started that have really helped grow the business when it comes to like marketing tactics or research? Like what's worked well for you guys?
I think the research part is pretty key. I mentioned before, I tried to start something prior to this and like just had a horrible market fit and just didn't do any kind of consumer research. And so was very adamant about making sure that when I had first started doing research into women's health, that I was actively talking to as many people as possible. And I think we've been able to both do that, but also I would say that something that sets us apart from a lot of founders here is that we're not married to a lot of things about our product. We've been very open to changing certain design things or at like, you know, we've pivoted 20 times about, you know, from where what we originally were trying to build into what we are actively pursuing right now. And I think that flexibility and not being really tied into what we think something has to look like or have, and really trying to listen to user testing, user feedback for like every single design that we're building out within the product has made a huge difference.
And it's that piece of, I think I just wanted to index on what Mel said, that we're not married to anything in the product. We are married to what the mission is and the problem we're trying to solve.
Ooh, so chills. I love that. I wish every founder felt that way, because so many founders come up with an idea and then they're like, it's their idea and it's sacred to them and nothing can like touch it and nothing can transform it or evolve it. And I love that you're saying it's like brass tacks, like bare bones, like what we're trying to do is this mission and everything that we're doing has to drive toward that. That's so important. I love that you said that.
Yeah. And I think we said at the very beginning of creating that, actually last year, we said, if at the end of the day, all we've done is build a tool that gives people a little bit more information and helps them make more informed decisions, then we've succeeded. So we're not necessarily measuring success by becoming a unicorn. I will gladly become a unicorn. Let me just say that. But we're not,
like, by the way,
twist my arm, I'll do it. But, you know, I think it really is that at the end of the day, like, if we can make any kind of incremental difference on a scale of getting people to understand their finances better and understand what these different decisions do and how they impact them, then that's a win.
Yeah.
And that's always been something that we've kept at the back of our heads too.
Just out of curiosity, going back, Saran, to what you were saying about, like, does this, like, we have a problem to solve and that's kind of like our North Star. When you were conducting research, were there any, like, responses or feedback that you were just shocked by that you weren't expecting?
Well, in a way, there, some of the research that we did was just, to answer your question, not at all shocking that people anticipate there is, feel that it's not possible to do both. And it's this sad kind of moment that, that reinforces the fact that people are very cognizant that the system is broken and we're all just solving it on an individual level. And so I think honestly that just all of that research kind of leads us to the kinds of structural design thinking of what's the way that we can, what's our theory of change? And so what's the way that we can actually use what we're doing today and then the interim plan and then the next step out and really phase in what we think ultimately is going to actually make the biggest difference for folks?
Yeah, totally. That makes perfect sense. Let's talk about the future of Mirza. Like, it sounds like you guys are in scale mode right now. And I think even just doing podcasts like this and getting the word out is going to be so beneficial because I feel like this is the type of thing that it's going to spread like wildfire among communities. So I think that's like that part of it, right? Like the shareability is so high, but where do you guys see Mirza headed?
So where,
why is that funny?
I will preface this with you're currently talking to the person who's currently talking is the one who has that blue skies view of where we're going to go. And I'm going to make Mel so nervous.
Nodding her head right now, by the way, for those listening.
So listen, honestly, we're at this stage right now that we're trying to get our solution into as many companies as possible.
Well, no, I'm laughing at you're laughing because you guys are talking about this like that she's very blue sky. It sounds like there's a good balance there of like schools of thought, which is good. That's healthy to have. But like, where do you see the future headed? I mean, obviously you just started last year, so you're still building up momentum, but what's on the horizon for Mirza?
So I think right now we're really focused on childcare and kind of these like our target customers is soon to be parents or people who are kind of in that planning process. But care itself is such a bigger bucket of, you know, what, like the things involved in care are so much more than just childcare alone. And 70% of unpaid labor and care work falls on women. So any kind of resources that we can put together to help people who have any kind of dependent care, whether that's elder care, I mean, so many people take care of family members who might need it. That's kind of where our long-term vision is headed of how can we expand this beyond childcare and into the overarching care industry. And, you know, we're a financial planning tool. We're looking at financial vehicles to help cover those costs of childcare. I think we're still in stealth mode as to what that looks like, but working with employers to see what we can build out in terms of employee benefits to kind of contribute to that.
That's great to have those corporate partnerships. That's so smart.
Yeah. So we're looking, we're in discussions with a few pilot partners right now, to kind of model out what this one vehicle could look like, which we're super excited about. But yeah, I just think really just tackling care in general. I mean, so many of us, especially for the millennial generation who, you know, might not even have the ability to like really rely on retirement funds for ourselves. So it's just totally. That elder care, you know, you're also most building out ways to care for yourself when you are ready to retire.
Yep.
And then thinking about our parents, like I think about how will I be able to support my parents all the time?
Yeah. Totally same.
So just kind of that is where we're trying to go. And Saran and I were laughing just because her blue skies approach is one of my favorite things about her, but my brain automatically goes into the how. And so she's like, well, yes, like this is what will happen. And this is how, like, this is what will change and all this stuff. And I'm like, I immediately break it down into the actionable steps about like,
and so immediately her face just like drops.
Yes. And I'm like already like, stop saying that. Yeah. She's like, I don't mean now. Like, you're saying it like you mean it now. Yeah.
So. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. That's where having a co-founder definitely helps. And just to like, for those listening who, I mean, Mirza's brilliant idea, there's clearly such a need for it. Where can people sign up and find the brand right now?
Absolutely. So right now we're in a limited beta mode of our app, but we're going to have the full app open in June. And so people can sign up to be a beta tester and to kind of stay informed on our newsletter at heymirza.com. And Mirza is M-I-R-Z-A. And then all of our socials are Mirza Says Hey. So Instagram, Twitter, we have a TikTok.
Yeah, love it. That's amazing. And what's the response been like for when you're talking about Mirza on your social channels or on TikTok or on LinkedIn? It's got to be so positive, I'd imagine.
It's both positive and disheartening because you have so many people being like, oh my God, I wish I'd had this.
Thank you so much, Saran and Mel, for coming on the podcast. You are doing something that is so important to so many people and they don't even realize that they need you yet. So thank you for creating this incredible tool. I can't wait to hear more about Mirza as time goes on because I know you guys are going to become really, really big in this space because people need this. So thank you so much for coming on, sharing your expertise and your stories. It means a lot. And I know our listeners got value from today's episode for sure, because I know when I was talking to you guys, I felt the same way. So for listeners, if you love today's episode, please go ahead and give us a review in Apple Podcasts. It goes such a long way and we really appreciate it, especially if you liked the concept of Mirza, or you just felt like it was a great addition to the podcast lineup. That type of feedback goes a long way, helps us a lot and helps us in planning. So thanks again so much for listening this week, you guys, and I will catch you next week.